Welcome to the Share Life podcast with Jason Scott Montoya, where we explore stories and systems to live better and work smarter. Welcome to another inspirational interview episode on the Share Life podcast. I'm Jason Scott Montoya, and today I'm speaking with Glenn Shellhammer. Glenn, say hello.
Hey, everybody. Glenn Shellhammer out here in Los Angeles.
Good to have you here. Thank you for sharing your life with us today. Glenn's located in Los Angeles. He is a father, a husband, the owner of the Shellhammer Real Estate Group, and the creator of the Silver Lake blog. He's also a client of mine, so we work together. Glenn, tell us about who you are and where you came from.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you for having me on today, Jason. Let's see. I am a real estate broker in Los Angeles. We have a boutique brokerage in the northeast side of Los Angeles. I'm responsible for a small team of agents. There's four agents on my team. We've got a couple of assistants. We've got a project manager. We've got Jason. And we quietly march to our own drumbeat here in LA, helping people buy and sell and invest in real estate. So that's what I do. When I'm not doing that, helping folks negotiate and get what it is they want in real estate, I'm hanging out with my beautiful wife. We've got two young kids, 4 and 6. It's a circus act at my house every day when they get home from school. And that's how tight and simple my life is. Certainly not easy, but I'm trying to dial it down and make it as simple as it can be and easy for me to understand how to get through the day.
Yeah. So how did this journey start? Where did you come from? Where were you born?
Sure. So let's see. First off, I just want to say that I'm 44 and I'm finally in a position in my life that I can say that I'm joyous and free. I am. That doesn't always mean I'm happy. That just means that I'm really joyous and I appreciate everything that comes at me, and I look at it, or at least try to, with the correct lenses on, as you know, the troubles are really just opportunities to learn something new or to acquire a new skill.
So how do you define the difference between joy and happiness then?
That's a very good question. So for me, I think we can all relate to what happiness is, right? I'm programmed to run towards pleasure and run away from pain. It's just like kind of what I came out with, right? So it's taken me a while, probably longer than more time than some, to understand that happy is, you know, a feeling of, you know, just exploding with good feelings, and, you know, things are going your way, or you're comfortable, or whatever it is, you know, you're really happy with what's going on. Joy to me is a step above that. And it's almost like an awareness of what's happening. And Joy for me, what's that?
Oh, sorry, I was just coughing.
joy for me is just like above it. And it's sort of like, it encapsulates all of my feelings, good or bad. Even though I may be in pain when I step on a pebble in my backyard that my daughter continually takes out of the little planters, even though I tell her not to, she's 4. you know, it's a quick, sharp pain, but it doesn't take away from the joy I have in my life. Right? Or this morning I was dealing with some challenges professionally with our website that you're involved in, right? And that's incredibly frustrating for me, but it doesn't take away from the joy I have in my life or the team that I've created and all the great stuff that we're doing, right? I just put things in perspective, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I look at the difference between being happy. I mean, I used to always want to be happy, and that's just incomplete, setting myself up for failure. You can't be up all the time. It just doesn't work that way. It's not for me.
Yeah.
And if I was up all the time, it would probably fade away, whatever that feeling of happiness is, because then that would just be kind of like the benchmark, right?
Yeah.
Where do you go from there? Okay, so a little bit of a backstory. So I came out to California, Los Angeles, about 20 years ago. I came out of here from South Florida and New Jersey. I was born in Florida. My parents were divorced when I was 3.
Do you remember that?
I do. So some of my earliest memories was like trauma and
wow.
just ugly stuff. I recall, you know, just a lot of fighting and nastiness and just negative feelings, from my earliest feelings, right? So my parents got divorced when I was 3, and I moved with my mother back to New Jersey. That's where her family is from. She battled with substance abuse for most of her life. She's doing much better now, which is terrific. And I have her with me. She's out in Palm Springs. We put her up in Palm Springs. This was over the last 5 or 6 years. But most of my childhood and adolescent years, I was alone. I always had a roof over my head. There was always food in the refrigerator, but any type of parenting or guidance was absent. Like, that wasn't there. And at the time, I thought that that was great, because I could, on the one hand, I thought it was great because I didn't have any rules and I didn't have any guidance or direction. So I was free to just do whatever I wanted to do. And, you know, that was fine on the one hand, but then on the other hand, I also adopted a lot of my mother's shortcomings as my own. And so a lot of that ugliness and a lot of that inability to take responsibility or unwillingness and, you know, all of that, I kind of absorbed as a young child that I wasn't then good enough and I wasn't smart enough and I wasn't tall enough and I wasn't good looking enough. And so I went down that path for many years, and it's taken me years to come full circle with stacking up enough evidence behind me, facts, that all of that self-talk isn't real, and it was never real. And I had no business thinking that way to begin with.
Yeah.
But, well, that's part of my story. So, you know, I was struggling a lot as a kid. You know, I was bullied a lot. I used to stutter a lot. I was overweight. I was, you know, I had a tough childhood in a lot of ways, and I had to be, you know, charismatic and funny. And I've been in survival mode since I've been a kid. And a lot of those tools have served me incredibly well in my life. So I came out to California to be an actor, right? Because just want people to love me, right?
Yeah.
That's all I wanted as a kid. I came out here to be on General Hospital, which is a daytime television show. That was very short-lived.
Like a soap opera or an actual fictional show?
It's a soap opera.
Oh, okay.
It's a daytime TV show.
Yeah.
That was short-lived. They canceled my character right away. It just wasn't right. It wasn't me. Just they didn't want the character. I hopped around. I got an agent. Did a few bit shows and pilots for TV shows, a few short films. Then I transitioned into the apparel industry, and I was in sourcing and acquisition and designing, which I did fairly well in. I'm really good at figuring it out, you know, moving parts. Like, what do I have to do to get through this, right? So, again, these were tools that I had probably built in survival mode when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So that was great for a while. And then I fell in love. I found my wife. And I didn't want to fly out of the country as much anymore. I didn't want to be in Shanghai designing clothing. I didn't want to be, you know, selling the product wherever the trade show was or, you know, whatever was going on. I wanted to really just switch gears. So I took some time off, and I wanted to give real estate a shot. I have an aunt that's fairly successful, and I liked houses, and I thought it was really interesting. And
what year was that?
Fun. That was in 2014.
Okay. And someone who does not live in LA, who thinks about LA real estate, this seems a little crazy. So tell us, is it crazy or was that is it a different context than maybe foreigners that don't live there understand?
Fine, crazy.
I hear the market, like in terms of the cost and the difficulty of living there or buying a home. That type of crazy.
Yeah. It's a very competitive market. The price per square foot is significantly higher than in most areas in the country, even in metropolis areas.
One thing I'll mention in my own story, me and my wife, we are from Arizona, Flagstaff, and we ended up moving to Atlanta. And but we had thought about maybe moving to LA or New York, but it was a tough jump to go to LA. So we ended up picking Atlanta.
There you go. You know, it's good for, it's a great place to live. I mean, you can't beat the weather. I mean, where else in the world are you going to be on the beach if you want to surf, or an hour and a half later if you want to snowboard? You can do that in the snow, right up the hill. You know, you can go to the desert in another 40 minutes and you can be sitting by the pool in Palm Springs. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much going on. There's the entertainment industry is out here. There's, you know, some of the best dining in the world is here. Two blocks from my house, we've got, you know, some of the best restaurants that are always in, you know, the magazines. Yeah. And it's a cool place to live, you know, if you, if you're strong enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
You got to have the fortitude. So why real estate specifically? You had all kinds of vocational options. What was it? Just an aunt or?
No, you know what it is? It's just, I think that it was an opportunity for me, like in the apparel industry, that I didn't have a cap in my income to where I could, I could earn.
Sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit, man. I mean, depending on what I wanted to do, how much did I want it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's interesting. How does that look? Did you launch your company right then, or did you have to do some other things before you were able to launch the business?
Yeah. So I knew nothing about anything with real estate. So I went to Keller Williams at first, and I was a licensee. It's very painfully easy to get your real estate license. It's like, you know, it's very easy, which the barrier of entry is so low that it makes it more challenging for folks to work professionally, because everybody's brother's, aunt, sister's, cousin has a real estate license that they don't use.
Mm.
And it's just so easy to say, I've got the credential. That doesn't mean you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Practically, you can't get through a deal.
Yeah.
So we have to deal with that quite often. But since the market changes, and when it does change and you need real skills to get through a deal, a lot of those agents just go away. What was the question?
Well, just how you got started. And so you said, you mentioned Remax, and then how do you go from there to your own business?
Yeah. So I had gone to Keller Williams at first. I went through their Ignite program, which is a step-by-step on how to tie your shoes. So, you know, it tells you how to tie your shoes, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, tell you how to put it on and what you're really looking for and what kind of shoe you need for what it is that you want to do. You know, it's just kind of like a broad stroke, generic look at what the industry is, how to hold an open house, you know, what's a CRM, you know, here are some basic scripts on how to ask people for business. You know, it's just very, very vanilla and generic. I couldn't figure it out in 6 months. I was literally in tears in my mentor's office, this woman, Victoria, and in tears, like, I just don't get why it isn't working for me. What am I missing? And her response was, oh, sweetie, that's the most genuine I've ever seen you. That was her response, right? So I was out on Caravan, which is looking at the new listings, and the office manager for Sotheby's and one of his top agents recruited me when I was at an open house. And with those people around me and kind of that time, I started to do business. I was rookie of the year, my first year at that office. And then I was fired like a week afterwards. They sent me a letter, said to return the keys to the office. And why that was is I had an opinion, and I brought in, you know, a few of the top agents, and I had shared my thoughts on how they behave in the office and what I think is appropriate. And look, basically, it's a nasty business, real estate, to be in. It really is. It's survival of the fittest. It's either, you know, swim or sink. And everybody, most people, not everybody, most people come from a place of scarcity in this business, and they just are greedy. And I voiced my opinion on that. And I said something to the effect of, you know, you guys march around here, you know, with your chest out, you know, bragging about the millions of dollars that you earn every year. And here you are, you know, doing everything you can to put your hands into the pockets of somebody brand new. So this is why most of the agents fail out of this office, the newer agents, is you don't give them an opportunity to earn enough so they can survive long enough to learn the business and to really drum up their own clientele and to get things moving. Case in point is I had a listing appointment that I had invited one agent to. He decided to bring his coworker with him just to do it three ways on my lead. And then they wanted to bring the buyer without sharing that side with me. And it was just a really, really ugly feeling. So I brought it to the attention of the office manager and they fired me.
Yeah.
They didn't play by their rules. So with that, I left and I was starting to create my own ideas of what I wanted to do with this industry and how I wanted to do them a bit differently.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing now. Mm. I'm creating the environment for a team to thrive. I'm sharing all of my clients with my junior agents. I'm doing this for two reasons. One, I'm leveraging them to help me with those clients so I can work on other projects and drum up even more business for us. Then I'm sharing the commission with them so they can earn real money right now being newer, and it's going to keep them alive long enough to where they can eventually have their own book of business. And the idea is that they'll stay loyal and they'll stay with me.
Yeah.
And if I can train a handful of people to do what I do and how I do it, that is, you know, given me the success that I have found, then I think that that's a really good idea.
Yeah. So you kind of mentioned a really sharp dynamic there, which is, you went into the industry, you experienced a part of it that you found highly problematic, and then you developed a business that did it differently. That seems to be a pretty powerful a way to approach it. So how do you think about that, and what kind of do you get acceptance? Obviously your agents would love that, but do you get pushback in the industry, or you're not going to make it because you're doing it differently?
I don't think it's gone out yet on the loudspeaker of how I'm doing it. I think I'm still flying under the radar.
Yeah.
Testing it out. Just like the senior project that I'm launching now. I'm going to my first tech conference in about 2 weeks. I'm going to trailblaze and completely change and disrupt the lead generation business in this country. And, you know, in a few years, Zillow and Realtor.com and the big guys are going to look at me like, you know, what's this guy doing? I'm going to disrupt everything.
Yeah.
Very simple idea that I've been able to develop because my agents are helping me with the clients. I can, you know, I can have extra hours a day to be figuring out what we're going to do next.
Yeah. So how do you, I think there's another part of the story that I think is worth talking about as well is, you know, establishing the business, figuring out how you want to shape it is one thing, but how did you get your clients when you started? How did you get those first clients? And then how did you get those clients after you started your own thing?
Yeah. Let's see here. So I have to give credit to an agent in Sotheby's office who I took out for drinks. And he had said, you should try getting a blog. You should try blogging about real estate. And at the time, not many agents were doing that. And that was in 2016. So I bought the domain name silverlakeblog.com. The neighborhood Silver Lake is one of the neighborhoods that we work in. And I hired an SEO person to come sit with me in my loft and teach me what this means. So he would come work with me a few days a week, and he taught me how to blog. He taught me about SEO, which has changed significantly in the last 8 years or 7 or 8 years. And that's what we did. And believe it or not, after a year or so of really hard work, we started to drum up real leads through the blog. That's what took me from earning this to this. But as far as business goes, I talk with everybody about what I do. One of the things I love to do is talk, and I think hear myself talk. So I'll share with people what's going on, and I pick up, you know, clients in an elevator, at the farmer's market, at the grocery store, at the dog park. I mean, I approach folks with an open mind and genuinely want to listen to what's going on with them. And then it'll come up, what do I do? And I'll share with them what I do. And if they're, even if there's a little bit of interest, I'll take the initiative and I will hand them my phone and I will say, put your information in here. And I'll immediately text them and I'll keep in touch with them. And it's just that simple. It's just people getting to know people that have to do something. And more than likely, when there's life-changing events, people need to do something. And that's when you,
So how do you go from that? How do you get to that from the life you grew up in? That's quite a contrast to go from isolated and kind of doing your own thing, figuring it out, to being a people person and serving others.
I'm 44 now. I mean, it was a lot of years figuring it out. I've always genuinely enjoyed, you know, being outgoing and silly and funny and looking for attention. And I think that's probably, you know, where a lot of that stems from, that I'm very comfortable walking up to strangers and just talking.
Yeah.
I have no fear whatsoever of that. And I'm a pretty good judge of character and body language.
Yeah.
So I've also had to really develop those skills from an early age just to survive in my household.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how does that tie into your own personal life and your relationship there?
Oh, well, this is kind of awesome. So, you know, I certainly didn't want this interview to go down the path of, you know, Glenn's horrible story, because if anything, I feel as if, knock on wood, I've got a complete joyous and free life now, because I've had the privilege of, you know, being at a really low place and being in a cold, dark corner in my mind for long enough to really understand what hell means.
Yeah.
And I've been there. And, you know, that's a really shitty place to be. And to trust a process and to trust a higher power and to move through that and transcend that, that's where I'm at now. So when I used to lie in bed at night, and I'll tell you this. So the way that my house was set up, there was a long street, and I would sit in bed at night and I would watch, and I could hear from the top of the street, like a quarter mile away, when the cars were coming over. We lived in a very rural, private little town, and the light would shine from one window to the other, and then race around my room as I got closer. And I would always wonder if that was my mother coming home. I know that sounds horrible and sad, but it's the truth, for years. And then I finally got full circle to, I find out that she's dead. I hope the police just knock on the door and it can be over, and all this can be over, because I don't know when she's coming home.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting you say that, because I have a friend who made a short film, and there's a scene with the car thing. And this kid is waiting for the car. Yeah, it's pretty powerful.
That was my life. And I had no one to talk to, nobody to share it with. And it was just really ugly feelings for years that I just stuffed deep down inside, stuffed it away. So while I lied there in bed, that's when I started to come up with this idea of how one day I'm going to be a father. Mm. And one day, you know, when I'm a father, I'm going to be the father that I want. And I started to think about what that is. And like, how does my father look? Like, how does that guy look physically?
Yeah.
What does he do every day? How does he participate in my life? You know, what are the lessons that, you know, he's going to help me learn? Like all of that stuff, you know, very descriptive as far as a 7 or 8 year old could be. Right. And then I started to over time, I would develop it even more. And that's just been part of my narrative my whole life, is this guy, this father. And that's who I am now, Jason. And I'm working towards, you know, I started working out 3 years ago because he looked a certain way. And now I look that way. And it's really important to me that I spend the time each day with my kids. When they get home from school, this stuff all goes away. I leave my phone in my office and I go hang with my kids. We play soccer. We go jump on the trampoline. We do whatever they want to do around the yard. We sit down. We have dinner. I do bath time with both the kids.
Yeah.
And then we go and we do our nighttime routine, which is a short prayer, things we're grateful for. And then we get into a story. And the stories every night change and they're on the fly, but they're based on a word. Either respect, discipline, faith, angry, happy, like whatever it is. You know, whatever the word is of the night. Sometimes I have them choose a word and then I create, you know, a 10-minute story with a little boy and a little girl in the story. What's the fly creating these stories? But that has created, plus the discipline of physical fitness. I get up every morning at 4 a.m. to start my day. And I have a rigorous 3-hour routine, a ritual with high impact weights. With that, and then moving through my whole day, I've created, you know, heaven on earth.
Yeah. So you mentioned being in hell. What would you say to that person that's there now? What would you say to them? How would you speak to them? What would you say to encourage them?
Well, you know, for me, trust the process. That's all I can say. That's the best advice I can give. And it's a very tough pill for me to swallow. Even now, trust the process. Talk to somebody. Believe that whatever the professional in front of you is saying, even if you don't feel it, just roll with it. You got to find somebody that you trust and you got to lean into that and you got to trust the process. And if along the way, most likely, if you're like me, you're going to make adjustments and you're going to make things happen. And, you know, trust the process because you're going to get somewhere different. And for me, it was very difficult to see, to see what was going on when I had the wrong lenses on, you know? So you have to trust that there's something outside of where you're at now.
Yeah. So that kind of hits on the idea of also the idea of mentoring and your parents, you know, that was a big gap in your life. Were there any others that stepped in to fill that partially or in for seasons of your life?
I've been blessed to have, unofficial, I call them my unofficial board of directors throughout my life. I've been very lucky to gravitate towards successful men and a few women, significantly older than me. It always seems that that's kind of how it happens. And I don't know if that's by design of whatever, but, I think the gray hair speaks volumes. It looks like there's some wisdom there, I guess, which I'm about. You can't see it right now, but it's creeping up on me too. Getting wiser, Jason, as the minutes go on. Yes, I've had the privilege of a few people that have given me some pointers and some you know direction on which way to go along the way. I haven't fully allowed anybody to come into my life completely. Until recently, where I'm really just leaning into life and trusting processes. But along the way, it was helpful. And I was hard-headed. I was a very challenging personality because I couldn't trust anybody, Jason. Yeah. You know, to this day, I still have trust issues. I believe none of what I hear and half of what I see. Like, that's my default.
Yeah.
You know,
is that a jadedness or is that something else?
I haven't completely worked through that yet, but I've learned to trust, my second thought and then to lean into my first action.
Okay. So, and what does that mean for you?
Well, for you and I, okay. So for today, for instance, you know, you and I sent you some emails that I would consider heated emails that if I could have just stepped back from that and given it a few more days, I may have had a different approach.
Yeah.
So that's a slip for me, you know, that type of a response that's very impulsive. It's fueled by possibly, you know, those old habits of mine of I can't trust anybody. Everybody's out to get me. Nobody loves me and all that crap that isn't true. So, you know, I have to remind myself that oftentimes, look, nobody, I'm not a believer in, you know, things are completely healed. And if anything, scars, I think, make people more interesting and more beautiful.
Yeah.
That's what I think. And so part of that beauty, you know, is the ugly part too. But, it, you know, as long as it's, as long as it's coming from an honest place, then yeah. I can deal with it. Right.
Yeah.
And so I try to step back and bite my lip most times throughout the day when I want to be impulsive and just respond and lash out. I think, is this even really appropriate? How yeah. I'm looking at this? What's my part? Right.
Yeah.
I have to be completely responsible for everything in me, on me, my team. Right. Yeah. The buck stops with me. So I need to take all the heat.
Yeah. So what has being a father taught you about that dynamic?
Oh my gosh. I don't want to go there. Parenting is definitely top on the list of challenges for me. Because of my childhood too, it's taken me a while to be comfortable with even being a parent. I felt like I was inadequate in a lot of ways. But helping you remember what I said a few minutes ago about that perfect dad when I was in bed? And oh man, my kid's got him and he won't listen to me. Just as hard-headed as I was as a kid. So I tell him sometimes, and he's six. I go, gosh, I don't tell him this, but I'm thinking to myself as he's just doing his thing. I'm like, do you know, fuck, like, you got me, dude. You got me. Full, my full attention. Let me help you. Let me help you figure that out.
Yeah, we got five. So it's, you get to the end of your wits and do and say things you wish you regret, but that's part of the learning process as well.
Okay. That's a whole nother podcast that I can learn about. Five? Please, buddy. My hat's off to you.
Yeah. So our oldest is 14 and the youngest is five. So, it's going to be a wild ride, but it's, you know, there's so much they have to teach me. It's not just me teaching them, but they have a lot to teach me as well.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
100%. They teach me a lot myself too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of their little mirrors. They're running around as little mirrors. So when you think about living better, what does that mean to you?
Let's see. Well, living better is taking responsibility for everything in my life. That's a good starting point. And then discipline is a huge part of that. So when I was a child, I thought I had freedom. What I had was chaos.
Yeah.
In my mind today, freedom is a design. Freedom is time blocked out that you've created and allocated for whatever that means to you. That's real freedom. Yeah. Right? So
now that's very countercultural. So how do you reconcile that?
It works for me.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it. You know, I get it with the time we're living in too. It's look, I've tried it the other way and it doesn't work very well. Right. Yeah. So now I'm doing it this way. And I believe that there has to be a certain amount of struggle and resistance for any type of growth. And it's important. And, you know, I'm finding that I feel so much better as a human being when I put myself under certain pressures.
Yeah.
And when I challenge myself on a regular basis. And then, you know, to say that I was in hell once before, I don't want to forget that. I don't want to forget what it is, because that's all part of being joyous.
Yeah.
I have to accept that part too, because there was so much growth and there was so much learning that went on during that time period. I have to believe that, you know, what tragedies of God aren't blessings, you know? And I have to believe that so I can have a better life.
Yeah. Yeah. And how does that translate to work? Like, what does it mean to work smarter?
Okay. So it starts with discipline, right? It starts with the discipline. It starts with the resistance. It continues with fuel, the food I'm putting in my body, the substances I'm putting in my body. And all of that, all of those tools that I have will translate into practice for the brokerage. Yeah. So I share with my team everything that's working with me. It's not all about money. It's about designing your life on doing what it is you want to do, how you want to do it, and within the parameters of how we can get that done to where you're, you know, earning money, you're creating a valuable service, and you're really taking care of yourself, whatever that means to you. So we set goals, you know, we set annual goals, and it's not like big brokerages. It's just all about volume and about, you know, here's a rah, 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 how to do it. Our goals definitely are about transactions. It's definitely about volume, but that's a piece of it. It's also about what are you going to do to get closer to the person you want to be. Most likely, if you're unhappy, it's because you're not living up to your full potential. You're not. And if you're pointing your finger at things in your life are in the way, or it's people in your life that are responsible, you got to take a hard look at that.
Yeah.
And if it is that certain choices you've made or the company you're keeping does have that effect on you, stop it.
Yeah.
Change it. And it's going to take time. And that's where trust in the process comes in, where you have to sometimes sit in your shit. Or you gotta, as Mel Gibson says, hug the cactus, right? Sometimes you gotta do it. And you gotta do that to really understand what's happening inside you and what's going on in your life and the habits and the choices you've made.
Yeah, so now you said earlier your inclination is to run away from suffering and towards pleasure. So how did you shift to hugging the cactus?
Okay. So for me you know, a lot of it happened in the gym. Believe it or not, this last 3 years have been so transformational for me with physical fitness. For me, that was the first the real aha moment to trust a process of, you know, physical training and nutrition and rest. And having to do those three things and having to then redesign my work schedule around it all. And then to see the progress within that, I was like, holy cow, systems do work. This really is working over time. I've tracked everything. See, you know, there's days where I want to stop or quit or do this or that, or this isn't working, or this is more important. If I stick to the script and I stick to the plan, I've seen progress.
Yeah.
And then I
tell us about what was it that triggered you to go down that road?
Gotcha. So, I wanted to be the father I didn't have. Right. And then it was, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was 41 years old and I knew if I didn't do it now, it was never going to happen. So I hired a trainer to come to my house. She owns a CrossFit, and my running joke has been, it's taken me 40 years to find the right lesbian to teach me how to be a man. And she would come to my house and she would knock on the back window, throw rocks, and, you know, talk to my wife downstairs. For the first year, work was more important, or this thing was pressing, or that had to happen. And whatever was in front of me, I allowed to pull me in every direction. And that's how I would live my life up until
very reactionary. Sounds like
everything was reactionary, and I did well. I earned more money when I did it that way, and when I was on my own without agents, actually too. I did. You know, at the end of the day, I was earning more. But now my life is so much better, right? And you know, money's going to come again. It's just we're doing something different. So eventually, my life shifted to okay. Fine, I'm going to commit to doing this fitness thing. And then when I did, and I started to see the progress over a long period of time, it took me a long time. I'm pretty hard-headed. And it took me over a year to be able to do it on my own without a trainer. And I started to see that progress happen. And by that point, I had already kind of time-blocked out the rest of my day. That's when everything just started to work and it started to change. And I started to see that, oh, okay, cool, I can take this time for this. I can take this time block for this, and just trust that things are going to happen, leaning into trusting this process. And it kind of, you know, all would tip over into the next bucket. And then my team started to see me physically changing. They started to see, you know, my suggestions for their personal book of business were working. And, you know, it's been a lot of growing pains, you know. We take two steps forward and one step back, but we're moving in the right direction in everything we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Let's shift gears and talk about what are some stories, real or fictional, stories, narratives that have shaped you as a person?
Wow. Okay. Well, we can stick to real. And my story is pretty simple. It's just, you know, it's what happened, how I got here, and what's happening now, right? So I think that a lot of my, you know, my earlier developmental years have shaped me into who I am today. And it's given me a lot of tools that I use in a daily basis. And I'm trying my absolute best to discard the tools and the habits that no longer serve me. But the ones that I've carried on are being incredibly resourceful, being very good at understanding body language and what's happening in the other person.
Dive into that more. Like, why did you develop that, and how did that come about?
I don't know exactly how it came about, but I think it was because I think why it became about was I've been in survival mode since I was very young. So I had to pick up on how my mother was feeling before she opened her mouth. You know, what was the temperature of the room going to be, you know, and I would slowly start to, it would leave the house. And then, like, you know, I wasn't a big fighter when I was a kid because I didn't have a father to teach me how to throw a punch, or I didn't know that I could take a punch either. You know, it just really scared me, and I never got past the fight or flight. I didn't realize that that uncomfortable heart rate goes away after just a few seconds, after you're in whatever it's in, after you had that initial response, that fight or flight, you can lean right into that and you can use it as a tool. Yeah. And I didn't know any of this stuff. So, you know, I was just, I quickly developed the ability to figure out when people got into a room, you know, how they felt or what was going to happen based on, you know, their approach, things like that. And then I pick up on that today, very small cues that other people don't pick up on.
Yeah.
Like even like a twitch,
yeah,
or just like a tilt or a quick reaction. Like, I'm very attuned to things that are happening.
Yeah. How does it help you now since you're not in that survival mode?
Now, because now I can, you know, I'll share something that I believe they need to hear, you know, without exactly putting a finger on it, unless I feel it's important to.
So you can be proactive.
Point. I'll just create, you know, look, you know, in some cases, Jason, you know, we've had listings that brothers and sisters have had a very difficult time, who are both trustees and beneficiaries of a trust, have had a difficult time coming to the table. And here's how we've gotten past that. Let me share with you what's going on with this, or let me tell you about this success story. You know, I'll pick up on things, and
yeah,
I think it's been really effective.
Yeah. So let's talk about systems. How do you think about and use systems in your work and personal life?
Cool. So I think systems are incredibly important now more than ever. Now that we've got a lot of moving parts and I've got a team of folks, right? Everything needs a place. Everything needs to be organized so we don't skip beats. And systems are part of that. So we have a front end. We have a CRM on the front end of our brokerage, which captures all of our clients. We have action plans that they're all nurtured on to touch our clients on a regular basis. On the back end, we've got a broker system called BrokerMint, which helps us walk through all of our escrows. What I've built out are checklists for the different types of transactions we can be in, and I've uploaded those into this BrokerMint. It also helps us with payment. So I'll generate the commissions through the back end of this BrokerMint, and I'll pay ACH. And it takes about a day or so to go into my agent's accounts after escrow pays us at a closing.
Yeah.
So it's a front end and back end that communicates, and that's how we get through deals. And then we also work on Google Drive, and we keep Drive files independently of all of our transactions and our clients. And there's notepads that I've created in there. So now what I do is when I want to dive into a deal and I'm working on with an agent of mine, whatever it is we're working on, I'll go into that notepad and I'll actually talk into the computer. I love that feature. I just figured that out like a month ago. Oh my God, what a game changer. So I talk the notes in and I'll save it. So when I got to go back to that deal, whenever it's time, tomorrow, Friday, or in 2 weeks from now, I'll remember what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
The systems are incredibly important. Without them, I'm just floating around in the Pacific like a jellyfish.
When does a system become tyrannical?
Remind me what tyrannical means.
Where it becomes oppressive or cumbersome or unhelpful.
So, we're there now in a few different spots, but I look at them more as growing pains because we're trying things out, you know? And that's fine. I mean, I'm completely fine with failing, Jason. I do it all the time. I just want to fail better each time, right? I want to feel a little bit better. So we have, we use Google chat room, Google, and we're trying different platforms. We have WhatsApp, we have emailing, we've got the Google Drive folder checklists, and there's still a lot of places where communication can end up. And I don't think it's the smoothest system. We need one hub for everything. It's really easy to understand. You use something called Airtable, which I've been at for just a minute or two. It's painful for me to look at it. It's been very, very confused. And so there's several moving parts, but I don't feel as if I also need to know the nuts and bolts of how every single piece works. Maybe I'm wrong, you know, but I mean, you know, you have a system that you use. If it works for you and my agents on my team understand it, that's great. I can stay up here with the high level of, is it working? What's working? What's not working?
Yeah. Yeah. What else? What other parting words of wisdom do you have for us? Anything you wanted to share that you haven't gotten a chance to yet?
Let's see. So I feel as if you ought to live your best life. You ought to do what you want to do every day. And run towards that, because what's the alternative, right? In most cases in business, if we're talking about business, most businesses fail. They do. There's a few that do incredibly well. There's some that do okay. And most startups specifically, they don't make it. I would much rather pursue something that I really believe in and that my heart's in, that might not make it, than opposed to work for somebody else that's not going to make it.
Yeah.
Or just work for a paycheck. I would never, ever advise anybody to sell out on their dreams for a paycheck.
Yeah.
We're only here for so many minutes, Jason. You know what I mean? We're not here that long.
Yeah. So what's the difference between the paycheck and what you're doing?
Well, everything. Because I'm doing now, look, let's call it what it is. What I mean to say is, if you're passionate about gardening, if you're so passionate about your tulips and your roses, and you go to different trade shows and expos looking for the best soil, or you just like hanging out in your garden and playing with the worms, and that's your special safe place, that's heaven for you.
Yeah.
And if you can have a job that you work at and you can tolerate it, or maybe you love it. Maybe you love the company you're working for and you like the benefits, then that's great. You've done it. You've done it. You've got a job that you love. You've got good benefits. It takes care of you and maybe your family. And then on the weekends or your off time, you have your hobby that you absolutely love. That's a successful full life to me.
Yeah.
Awesome. In most cases though, I hear how people hate their life, and they hate their life because they don't like their job. Or they don't like what they're doing or who they're doing it with, or they don't know who they are, even worse. Yeah. They don't know what they want. That's the other side of that coin. So what I'm suggesting is figure out what it is that makes you happy. If it's money or not, maybe it's just a hobby like gardening. Mm-hmm. If that makes you happy and that really fills you up and blows up your skirt or blows your hair back, go with it. If you can also be happy and satisfied with how you earn money. and survive, right? Because we all have to pay our dues in this world, right? And nobody owes us a living. So if you can do them both and you can make it your own thing, like I've done, I think that's just the cherry on top.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a friend who he recently moved to Los Angeles and he's a screenwriter. And that's his kind of his thought. It's like, you know what? I might as well make the leap. And if I fail, I fail. But at least, you know, there was an adventure and I'm in a great place to live and we'll do something else if it doesn't work out.
Yeah. And here it is. I was polishing silverware and it was like 2008. And I was really excited. I was working as a waiter in the Four Seasons in Beverly Hills. And I was, and we work as a team in the dining room. There's two waiters that work together. And the setup is pretty grueling. You got to polish the silverware to get everything set up. I was very excited about my callback at Universal for a new TV show. Very excited about my callback. I had gone through an audition, a callback, and it was a producer reading. It was the last step.
Yeah.
Came in that night. The guy that I was partnered with in the dining room, he was telling me about his last producer reading too, that he was really pumped on. He didn't get that one, but he was really pumped on the next one. That man was 67 years old.
Yeah.
67 years old, polished and silverware. And that wasn't good for me. That was the moment. And I was, you know, I'm a lifetime member of the Actors Studio. I can, you know, some of Al Pacino, Martin Landau, Mark Rydell, these were all my coaches. These were my guys that when I was practicing theater, they were there in the room telling me that I can do it.
Yeah.
And I probably could have if I would have stuck my guns, but I wasn't willing to do it. I didn't love it that much that I was willing to sacrifice being the father I wanted to become.
Yeah.
And the husband I wanted to be and the businessman that I knew I could be.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like for some people, it's worth it. I have friends of mine that are still waiters, that are still going on auditions and they love their life. And that's good. As long as you know who you are and you love you got your passion. And if you can turn your passion into dollar signs, terrific. But then if you're okay with them being separate and you like your job too, that's success. I know a lot of people that have a lot of money. I don't call that success. If they're miserable, I call that rich.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
you have a time machine. You go back to the 7-year-old version of yourself. What do you tell him?
Oh, man. You're a good boy. You're going to be a good man. Take it easy, kiddo. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing. How can people connect with you? If they want to reach out. Are you on social media, your websites?
Yeah. Well, we're on Instagram. We have a couple of websites, shellhammergroup.com, silverlakeblog.com. And if you just, as cliche as it sounds, if you Google Glenn Shellhammer, our Instagram handle should come right up.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Glenn, for sharing your life with us today.
Thanks a bunch, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Share Life. For additional stories and systems to live better and work smarter, visit jasonscottmontoya.com. That's jasonscottmontoya.com. We look forward to having you listen in on the next episode of Share Life.
Are you a small business owner? Have you hit a glass ceiling where year over year, you cannot rise above a certain revenue level? Check out Jason Scott Montoya's book, The Jump, to discover how to level up your leadership and pivot your entrepreneurial passion to the highest level. The Jump from Chaos to Clarity for your striving small business is available on Amazon.